Well, good morning. I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Committee on Children, Families, Finance, and Policy. Welcome to all. A couple of bits of business. We do, a quorum is present, though we're missing a bunch of folks, so I think I won't go through the roll call. I know a number of people are running late. We have just a quick note for everybody. We are very likely to go until 10:15. I better repeat this when other members come in. I think I said that last week, but just want to make sure that folks have that on your minds. We're going to begin by having working through our minutes. May I have a motion to approve our minutes from March 9th?
So move.
Representative Coulter moves the minutes from March 9th. Any additions or corrections, members? Hearing none, all in favor of the minutes, approval of the minutes from March 9th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. That motion passes. Those minutes are approved. The minutes of March 14th, the motion to approve them. You may say. I think Representative Coulter, you're welcome. Okay, Representative, I think you're the one stuck with that this morning, sir. Any additions or corrections to the minutes of March 14th, members? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes from March 14th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes. And the minutes from March 16th, Representative Coulter, you're willing to move approval of those minutes?
So moved.
Okay, any additions or corrections, members? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes from March 16th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Three motions pass. We have minutes from March 9th, 14th, and 16th. So members, and then the plan today is to receive a presentation and public testimony on the first three bills and then have a discussion about those bills together and then to move on to the other three bills. So we've got a pretty jam-packed agenda. Any questions about the process this morning from anybody? Not seeing any, so we're going to start. And I think we have all guests this morning in our committee. No, not entirely. Representative Hicks is one of the bills. Representative Feist, you're with us, though. I don't believe you have any amendments.
Pardon me, you do.
Okay. First of all, if I may have a motion. Representative Coulter, I'm going to rely on you as well. If you can move House File 135 to bring that before us.
That is my motion.
Thank you. And then Representative Feist, I'm so sorry. You do have an amendment, though. It looks like it may not have made it in our packets. I guess it needs to be printed. So it was posted, and so what we'll do is we'll get a copy of that maybe address that once we have physical copies, Representative Feist. So please dive in and present House File 135, and welcome.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before COVID-19 struck, the Twin Cities region was grappling with surging homelessness. The pandemic exacerbated the problem, but also brought new resources to address it. In partnership with the state, local, nonprofits, and federal funding, Hennepin County invested significantly to fund homelessness solutions, to prevent homelessness, and to move Minnesotans to permanent, stable housing. Hennepin County focused that investment on deeply affordable housing for those with the lowest incomes and people experiencing homelessness, including $45 million to shelters and support services programs to swiftly move people out of homelessness to new housing opportunities. This investment, however, is primarily one-time money, and they face a financial cliff in 2024. Homelessness is a statewide problem and needs a state solution. House File 135 will provide the ongoing, sustainable funding to maintain the shelter service models and that better serve the people and ensure that homelessness is rare, brief, and non-reoccurring. And with that, I will turn it over to a true expert who can provide more granular detail.
And please identify yourself, share your preferred pronouns if you're comfortable with that, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Representatives, my name is David Hewitt. I'm the Director of Housing Stability at Hennepin County. And I'm going to cut to the bottom line today, if I may. Hennepin County has invested local funds and almost 40% of our pandemic recovery funds into housing and homelessness. But pandemic recovery funds, as you've heard, expire at the end of 2024. Now, we as Hennepin County expect to continue investing a baseline of $13 million a year into shelter each year moving forward, 2025 and beyond. We're also unique in the state of Minnesota in that we guarantee shelter for families with children. That often expands our costs. Indeed, in the next year ahead, we anticipate an additional $17 million being needed to meet that local commitment. So we are invested, but we need the state to join us as a partner in this work. Otherwise, several vital programs will face insurmountable fiscal cliffs come the end of 2024, and will have to close or significantly contract. In short, what we are facing is, in 2025, closure for Avivo Village, the most intensive program serving people from encampments with chemical health and mental health needs in our community. They're sheltering 100 people every single day, have helped more than 100 people move on from crisis to permanent housing. Closure for the American Indian Community Development Corporation's Homeward Bound shelter, the only culturally specific shelter in our community responding to the disproportionate impact of homelessness on the Native American community, sheltering 50 people every day, have also helped more than 100 people move on to permanent housing. The end of daytime sheltering. Currently, there are 320 people across Agate, Simpson, Catholic Charities, and Salvation Army shelters who have 24/7 access to their shelter. Starting 2025, they will once more have to leave in the morning and return in the evening when the shelter reopens, undermining our work on long-term housing. A massive reduction in housing-focused case management. A new team at Hennepin County have helped in just over a year 423 individuals exit homelessness for permanent housing, almost half coming directly from the streets to housing. Having to dial back this service will dramatically slow our progress. And then the end of diversion operated by Catholic Charities. Just since the start of this year alone, 77 families and 96 single adults seeking shelter were helped to find safe alternatives in their community through this program. So sustaining these services will require nothing short of a matching $13.5 million per year starting 2025. Without them, demand on shelter will increase without that diversion service, just as our ability to shelter decreases without Avivo Village and Homeward Bound, and as we slow our progress on helping people exit to permanent housing through the loss of 24/7 operations and case management. Finally, the Agate and Simpson construction projects that are so close to being able to offer modern shelter and housing are in jeopardy if they cannot source the remaining capital as a matter of urgency. They cannot wait. So that is the bottom line. Taking a very quick step backwards, reducing homelessness at some level simply requires that more people exit homelessness than enter it on a daily, monthly basis. As you've heard, prior to the pandemic, we saw massively increasing unsheltered homelessness, a 377% increase from 2016 to 2020. This is where we see the greatest risk from fire, infectious disease, violence, and exploitation, and where we have the greatest impact on public health and public safety. As you've heard, the pandemic exacerbated those challenges but created resources. Hennepin invested $46 million in housing, building on an earlier $26 million in local funding, and $45 million into homeless programming. And these are the services that we're talking about again here today. And we're looking for that partial match to ensure that these specific services can continue beyond 2024. We are not looking to replace the millions that the county will continue investing, nor the millions that our nonprofit partners continue raising every single year in order to operate. The reason we need to continue these programs is that they are proving effective. What you see here is from a dashboard that HUD Technical Assistance put together for our community. It combines all of the housing outcomes from all of our programs and compares pre-pandemic to the period starting from when those investments began in October 2020. The higher line is that latter line. And what you see is that every single month since we started these investments, more people have been exiting homelessness to permanent housing. And we see that reflected in our federal point-in-time count as well. Our 2022 federal point-in-time count recorded the lowest ever level of homelessness in Hennepin County and a 24% reduction in unsheltered homelessness, the first reduction following all of those years of increases. We're certainly not satisfied. That's still far too many people in crisis, but we do need to continue that trajectory. Because we can look at the alternative, and some representatives may have seen the New York Times article about Phoenix this weekend. This slide combines data from census and point-in-time counts from a few communities around the country. It does not include Phoenix or San Francisco or LA. But what you can see here, for instance, is that in Portland, they have a rate of unsheltered homelessness 8.5 times that of our local community. If you can imagine for every encampment that you might have seen, 8 more like that, or in Oakland, 10 more like that. That is the path that we turned away from in 2020. But there are no guarantees that we will continue to make further progress. That's very much dependent on the choices that we make. So I've shared a lot of numbers, but behind every number there's a person. This mural was painted on the walls of one of our shelters, and every time a guest moved out of that shelter to permanent housing, they added a flower and they added their initials or their name to that flower. So each flower you see here on this mural represents a new beginning for someone after the crisis of homelessness. And that's what we're all working for, and we appreciate your support, and I'm available for questions.
Mr. Hewitt, thank you so much for the presentation. I know the time limits are so tight, but that was really clear and concise and compelling. And so thank you so much for all of your work. We will, and so for those who've joined us, a couple process points, and we're going to be having presentations from the first three bills and having an extensive time for discussion, and I do expect we're going to go till 10:15 for those couple folks who've joined us. Mr. Hewitt, thank you. I think we'll, I think that's the only testifier to sign up in advance. Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on House File 135? I'll ask that question. And again, the plan is we're then going to move to the other two bills, and then we will have a discussion. Mr. Hewitt, of course, please stay close by. Representative Feist, let me think. Why don't we, I guess I had not thought about this ahead of time. If you want to provide any final thoughts, but then, of course, when we have the discussion, too, there'll be, I'm hoping to provide a chance as well. But Representative Feist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to also make sure that I get my amendment adopted.
That's a great point. So we'll need to bring your bill back up as we get physical copies, unless we have that. That is still coming. So Representative Feist will make sure to bring that up and then get the amendment on. But Representative Feist.
I do have another bill presentation immediately after this one.
Got it. Maybe what you can do is you can tell us about the amendment, and then what we can do is we'll have another member bring it up for you and have that be added on so you can take off. I believe it's posted online for those as well. But Representative Feist, anything you want to tell us about what will be the A2-1 amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It just shifts $10 million that was for this fiscal year, which is just about to end, to the next year.
Oh, and actually, I guess they are being distributed right now. So if members are okay, we will, Representative Coulter, you had made the motion for this bill, so perhaps if you're willing to move the A2-1 amendment as it's being distributed to members. And again, for those watching, this is online, has been posted, was posted previously. And so we'll get a copy to, and Representative Coulter, are you willing to move the A2-1 amendment?
I am.
And the bill's authors explained it to us. Members, any discussion to the A2-1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the A2-1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So your bill is amended. Representative Feist, thank you so much. Good luck with your other bill hearing. And I know, Mr. Hewitt, you'll be sticking around for questions as well. Thank you so much. Oh, Representative Feist, please.
Can I give a clear comment?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, please.
I don't want to end on that anticlimactic note. So I just wanted to say, you know, as Mr. Hewitt said, this really demands a statewide solution. 40% of the folks who are in shelters in Hennepin County come from outside of Hennepin County. This is a public health issue. This is a public safety issue. This is a really important issue impacting children and families in Minnesota. And Hennepin County, as you saw from the data, is just really uniquely effective. And I want to make sure that we see this program continue to receive the funding that it needs to be hugely successful.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Representative Feist. And with that, the chair lays over House File 135 as amended for possible inclusion of budget bill. And I know, though, we will be discussing it shortly in this meeting as well. So next, we have got House File 1686. And if Vice Chair Keeler, if you're willing to move House File 1686 to bring that before us.
I move House File 1686 before.
Thank you so much. Representative Hollins, welcome to the Children and Families Committee. I do not see an amendment for you, and so please proceed with presenting your bill whenever you wish.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you, committee members.
We have an oh.
I can.
We can take that. Try to take down the presentation. Yeah, let's see. Or you?
No, I don't. No, I don't mind that. My computer's just being funky, so
okay.
My notes are on here. Thank you so much, members of the committee. This bill is a result of a collaboration with over 60 public, private, and nonprofit partners who align their work to ensure that homelessness in Ramsey County is rare, brief, and non-reoccurring. This collaborative approach and alignment is essential to addressing the unique needs in our community, and the support in this bill of $75 million for use over a five-year gap will help achieve a more sustainable and effective system that will reduce the need for ongoing investment over time. This funding will be used to provide shelter and services to families, single adults, youths, and individuals with complex needs. It will also help expand and create new or enhanced adult and family overnight shelter, day shelter support, and outreach and infrastructure to move more people into a path of housing. This investment is needed to bridge the gap from the end of the COVID funds utilized by Ramsey County and the City of St. Paul to the completion of new affordable housing. Our leadership in Ramsey County, I'm very proud of. Our local leaders have been just phenomenal in the area of homelessness. And I'm so excited to have Commissioner Moran, former Representative Rena Moran, and my Deputy Mayor Tincher to share more about the local story and the importance of the legislature's support this session. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Moran, former Representative Moran. So nice to have you here, and please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. It's great to be back in front of your, great to be here in front of your committee and also seeing my former colleagues here today. But I want to thank you for the hard work and important work that you are doing this session. I know it's not easy. Your committee has a tough but critical role to aid in the work to ensure that every Minnesotan has a safe and dignified place to call home. As many of you know, addressing our homelessness crisis is key to addressing our state disparities. Safe, affordable housing allows Minnesotans to focus on education, work, and their health. Both Ramsey County and the City of St. Paul invested federal CARES and ARPA dollars at the tune of $74 million to fund the front end of the homelessness pipeline for emergency shelter beds and other critical housing support services, as well as the back end. And we are building 1,000 affordable housing units that will create stability for families. However, the timeline to build those units online is a 3 to 5 year gap, and that gap is what we are asking for. The state, through this legislation, to help us fund, we need your help to ensure the work we've done on the front end doesn't slide back as we wait for our affordable housing unit to come online. It's also important to acknowledge that only 42% of those served in Ramsey County shelters come from Ramsey County. We are delighted to see so many thoughtful proposals moving forward this year that will help alleviate these statistics and bring more services statewide so that services can be handled more appropriately in local communities. We are leading the way in Ramsey County on how to address the homelessness crisis, and our model is one that we hope will serve the rest of the state as more resources become available. So the resources in this bill will help specifically address and continue progress on increasing women's emergency shelter space to better meet the demand, outreach, system improvement, and extreme weather support to keep people out of the cold when shelters are full. Number three is to maintain youth drop-in centers to connect people to resources. Four is to expand adult day shelter space, the hours and the services. And five, specialized programming to serve the most frequent users of emergency and crisis services. Mr. Chair, I just want to say my time at the county, I am just really impressed with the work, the holistic, comprehensive approach that Ramsey County is doing with community to really house and stabilize family. The work that we're doing, they've been doing over the last 3-4 years through the ARPA dollars, have really improved the lives, and you know, we want to continue to work to ensure that we are doing that in partnership with community and community-based organizations and those who have been impacted. I want to thank you so much for the opportunity to present today, and I will stick around if you have any questions.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your work. Thanks for being here, for your longtime leadership, Commissioner Moran. And yeah, Deputy Mayor Tincher, welcome. So glad to have you here. And once you get settled in, please proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair and members. I'm Jamie Tincher. I'm the Deputy Mayor in the City of St. Paul, but here today I chair our continuum of care in Ramsey County, and I wanted to spend my time just talking to you a little bit about our continuum of care and the approach that we have and the incredible people that we work with. In our letter, you can see the list of our governing board and our members, and you'll see all of the nonprofits and the community that comes together around what we do in Ramsey County. When COVID hit, St. Paul went from about 40 tents to nearly 400 in a couple of months. It was a crisis within a pandemic, and we didn't have a game plan to follow. Our response was first to start talking to those most directly impacted, our residents and encampments, And second, we didn't fall victim to finger pointing at each other. We came together so we could design solutions to the barriers that we heard from people in encampments. We've stayed together throughout that entire time, and the remarkable service providers, nonprofits, city and county employees who will implement the interventions funded by this bill are top-notch, and they literally save lives every day. At the city, we've also invested in a team that we refer to as HART, our Homeless Assistance Response Team. They provide a weekly summary of how many people we have in St. Paul sheltering outdoors, and I apologize, I think I don't know if we included these in the packet, but I can make sure that we get those to you. It's a weekly update that provides status on who we have that are that's surviving outdoors. As of March 15th, we had 60 people at 31 locations. 42 were men and 19 were women. It's really important that partnership between that city team and the service providers that would be funded through this bill, because it helps us really understand the need and that crisis that interventions that we need to be providing on a daily, weekly basis.
We've got probably just like a minute left on this bill, so I want to make sure to get Ms. Roth in as well. But
really quick, this team provides direct, relentless engagement at an individual level to try to problem solve and solution find person by person. Their newsletter tells many of those stories, and this funding will go to the providers, services, and supports that the HART team connects individuals to. The last thing that I just wanted to underscore is that when we talk about that affordable housing investment that we made with our ARPA dollars, in the 3 years before that $74 million investment, there were 20 units at 30% AMI added in the entire city of St. Paul. 20 units for a family of four that makes $35,200. With half of that investment, we are on track to add 210 units at 30% AMI and below. So we've gone from 20 in the past 3 years to, with half of that investment, we're going to hit over 200. And that was a strategic investment around making sure that our solution to homelessness is housing.
Thank you so much. And thank you, WMA, for your work this last few years, especially as a St. Paul legislator. I know you're sitting next to Representative Hollins. You have led the work to address homelessness in our city. I know the county more broadly, but also the city. And I'm just so grateful to you for your work over all that time and testimony today.
Thank you, Chair. I want to introduce one of our incredible service.
Yes, please, Ms. Roth, come on up. Yeah, I'm sorry that the time is so truncated at this point, but please proceed if you can just keep it pretty tight.
Thank you so much, Chairman Pinto, members of the committee. My name is Randy Roth, Executive Director of Interfaith Action of Greater St. Paul, host to Project Home, the largest shelter for families with children in Ramsey County. 54% of our guests are under the age of 13. For 20 years, our shelter sites rotated through two houses of worship each month. But when COVID hit, and the houses of worship closed, we had to find another solution that day. After working with Ramsey County on several temporary solutions, at Christmas 2020, the Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet told us that there is room at the inn and invited us to move into the provincial house at 1880 Randolph near the St. Kate's campus. Let's talk about success statistics. As soon as families move into Project Home, our staff helps them focus not just on stability in shelter, but on economic mobility to achieve their family's goals for jobs, housing, transportation, childcare, and more. Here are key statistics. Our average length of stay decreased from 84 days to 66 days, making room for that many more families each year. We follow our families 6 months after they move out, and the data's not perfect, but it shows that for the families who stay in touch, 96% say the new arrangement is working out after 6 months. With 100 beds for 30-plus families at a time, we are within striking distance of wiping out Ramsey County's wait list for family shelter with no significant revolving door. Today, there are 45 families on that wait list. I asked the committee to review the many support letters we have on file here, and if there were time, I would tell you the story of a family in 1 minute, but if there's not, I understand.
I'm so sorry. I don't think that there is, but please, I do encourage members to review the letters. Full disclosure, Project Home's in my district. I've toured it. I encourage everybody to. It's amazing. It's just terrific. And actually, maybe I will just say that when one of the nuns passes away in Crown Lake Village, which is right next door, when a family moves out, the family then receives the furniture. Often this is the case, that it's actually passed along, and the family, it's this incredible relationship. It's just lovely, lovely, lovely. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
yeah,
Chairman.
Thank you. Yeah. And are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? And again, we'll have a discussion very shortly about this and the other two bills we're first hearing. Representative Hollins, final comments from you that you wish to share?
Yes, thank you, Chair. My final comments are just, there's not a lot that we can say that came out that was good from the pandemic, but one of the things that I do think was a benefit is this group and coalition of collaboratively working public, private, and nonprofit organizations that have really come together to make a huge difference in Ramsey County. So I would just humbly ask for your support on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Hollins. Yeah, and please, I'm not sure if you're going to be able to stick around. I know Representative Feist was not able to, but for discussion, you can. Okay, well, that's great. So with that, the chair lays over House File 1686 for possible inclusion in our committee's budget bill, and again for conversation in just a little bit. So Representative Hicks, you're making your way up front. We're getting your presentation ready to go. Representative Hicks moves House File 2138 to bring that before the committee, and it does appear that you have an amendment, and once you get settled in, you can let me know if you want us to move the A1 amendment. Representative Hicks?
Yes, I would like to move the amendment.
Okay.
It's an author amendment, and the purpose of the amendment is to be responsive to the community based on the Olmsted County Task Force and community input. After our first stop, we had some additional thoughts, and so we wanted really for it to reflect the needs of our community very specifically.
Terrific. Okay. Any discussion, members, to the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So your bill is amended. We've been responsive to those community expressions, which is great. And to Representative Hicks, please proceed with your bill.
Thank you so much, committee and chair. I will keep my remarks today very brief because I want the experts from our community to be able to share about the collaborative and important work that we have been doing. Olmsted County has changed and grown over the years. Rochester is now the third largest city in Minnesota and continuing to grow and expand. With that growth, we have seen new needs in our community. In your packets, you'll see a copy of this presentation, and we'll also get you a copy of the full community report as well. to see what we have been doing to address homelessness and the commitment to community collaboration that we have had in these efforts. Our community has worked hard and invested, but we need some additional dollars to continue to move this work forward. I will now turn it over to my testifier and expert to share more about this work in our community.
Yeah, please, welcome to you. Please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dave Dunn, and I serve as the Olmsted County Housing Director, and I'm here to speak on behalf of our coalition here locally that is working around our response to unsheltered homelessness, and I'm very pleased to be here and pleased to be here with Representative Hicks this morning. Just a few kind of comments, and we have a couple of slides I think we're going to hit, and it does work, all right. Technology is always wonderful, and then you wonder if it works for you, and it does. So this is a great day already. Oh. But just to talk a little bit about kind of what we've been working on as far as within our community, it really, you know, I think it wasn't that long ago that Olmsted County and Rochester really didn't have a significant response to unsheltered homelessness. So in 2019, really, is when this started, and we started seeing people staying and sleeping in our skyways, and we saw the closing at that time of our only shelter, which was only available on nights when the temperatures were below zero. Our response to that was getting the city and county to work together on creating a response, and within about a four-month period, we went from no shelter to a functioning shelter. This was in December of 2019. The idea was that it was going to be a seasonal shelter, And as all of you know, the world changed in March of 2020. And so with COVID, as many of the other testifiers here today are talking about, I think it really changed how we provide operations and the work that we do, and really probably in a way that was transformational for all of us, and that was the same for us. We did two things as part of that. We created a shelter that was an everyday shelter, and then we also created a housing stability team. I think one of the things that's so important to all of the work that we do is that we provide housing, but we also provide the case management, and the two of those things together provide success for clients who are experiencing homelessness. Since that time, we've continued our work. In 2021, we actually made it a year-round shelter, which for us, again, that was the first time we've done that in our community. We also opened what we call the ECHO Center, and like all things, it's got to have a good acronym. ECHO stands for Empowering Connections and Housing Outreach, and what we did is the Warming Center, our shelter in Rochester, is owned by Olmsted County, and so there was a part of the building that was open next to it. We actually opened up that bay that was open, and we put a couple social workers there, so now every morning there's social workers available for people who are staying at the shelters. So we've done this work. We've created street medicine. We've launched daytime programming as well. But really, it's kind of about where we're at today and kind of moving forward. I know we have limited time. So where we're at today is that our warming center is over capacity most nights. We had 1,000 people experience homelessness for at least one day in Olmsted County in 2022. Now, our current count is somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 on a daily basis, but at one time last year, that was the case. We've seen a 31% increase in students experiencing homelessness this year. We're seeing evictions delayed a couple of months. Our emergency assistance is exhausted, and we just have an increased demand. In my time in this role, my 6 years in this role, the number of people who are struggling is greater than it's ever been, and again, something you've heard from the other presentations. So what we did is we worked with our partners in the community, our public and nonprofit partners, to really try to, and people with lived experience, to really try to come up with what are some recommendations for us to enhance the system we have and kind of continue to grow the operations that we're working on. Just want to highlight this list here. Again, I'm speaking on behalf of all of these community partners this morning. Due to time constraints, there were several who wanted to come and lend their support, weren't able to do so, but the city, the county, the school district, and over 10 nonprofit organizations that work with people experiencing homelessness in our community came together and really came up with these five recommendations for us that we're looking for your support with. Number one is to create and maintain our robust shelter system. Our warming center that we created in 2019 is a county building that is ending the end of its useful life, so we need to have some long-term decisions about that. Creating some facility for medical recuperative care. As all of you know, we have the state's largest private employer in the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and with that comes people that have health needs, and a lot of times, in spite of the great efforts of the staff, they're discharged into homelessness, and so really having that opportunity for people to heal. Shelter needs for youth and families. So we have three shelter beds in Olmsted County for families right now and a waiting list of 27 waiting to get on there. Youth, we're not really to the point yet where we have even, it's just a hole in our system that we're trying to fill. And then again, number four and five you can see on there are really about that case management and outreach, because the key to all of this, there's two things in my mind that if we do these things well, we can address and end homelessness, and that is we need housing. Obviously, we need housing. And then we also need the case management that goes along with it to provide the assistance, to provide the guidance, and to provide those tools needed for people to thrive. So those are our recommendations. And what we're here today to ask for is for your assistance to help us as we continue to create and grow our local system. We are, I think we're a little newer in our journey than the two preceding presentations, but we're really trying to build a robust response and try to use a lot of the best practices that we're seeing around the state and around the country. And so with that, I will conclude my remarks. And I don't know if
Thank you so much. Thanks for your work. It sounds like a good journey that your community has gone on. Thank you. Just see if anybody else, any members of the public wish to testify on this bill. and not seeing any. So, again, the plan will be, we'll be starting a conversation very shortly, but Representative Hicks, any comments from you about your bill? Any further comments?
Thank you so much, Chair and Committee. I am so proud of our community. When we started to see an increase in need in our community got together. It got together with private entities, it got together with public entities, and it got together with nonprofits, and it responded. And I'm so proud of all of the work that's been done, and I'm hopeful that we can support Olmsted County just a little bit more to get us across the finish line to finish the work.
Thank you so much, Representative Hicks. What I'm going to do, members, is just so we continue to have a bill in front of us, we're having the conversation, is I'm going to leave 2138 in front of us. And then move to, and we have, I really appreciate testifiers. I know there's really tight time on important and complicated bills, but this allows us somewhat more time for conversation and discussion and questions. And so we'll do that on all three bills, and I'll have something that I'll be asking. First, I want to see if members have anything that they want to ask or any comments that they want to make. And as I'm awaiting that, I'll just note for everybody, the Pathway Home Act, authored by Vice Chair Keeler, House File 444, passed the House. We can all be really proud of that. The other body has not acted on it yet. A little bit frustrating. I'll just speak for myself about that. And I want to say that it's my intention as chair that our budget bill will certainly include the Pathway Home Act. I hope we can do significantly more than that in this area and in others as well. But at the very least, there's that. So I guess I'll maybe ask each of the, with each of these bills, each of these proposals, if you can just talk about if our budget bill contains the components of the Pathway Home Act, how, if anything, would that change what, in addition, you all would be seeking? I would assume that there'd be some portion, and I've had some conversation with some of you about this, that would cover at least a portion of what is being requested, but perhaps some, perhaps not. So we'll start with Olmsted County, since you're in front of us, either Representative Hicks or your testifier.
Thank you so much, Chair. So I will answer real quickly, and then I'll throw over to the expert. You know, one of the things that we sort of glossed over in our presentation that I think is really important is that medical recuperative care. We really need that medical recuperative care option in Rochester. The Mayo Clinic has been a wonderful community partner and supporting us in our street medicine outreach, but you can't heal from massive surgery if you are not in a place to do so. And there is a space in between hospital level of care where Medicaid will continue to pay for you to be in the hospital and being unhoused that needs to be handled in our community. And so that's one specific example that I know our community members have spoken to me directly about the importance of that I just want to shout out to personally, because I think our most important job as humans is to take care of other humans who are vulnerable and in significant need. And so that's just one area that I'm really passionate about. But I'll let Mr. Dunn answer any other questions.
Mr. Dunn, I guess especially I'm interested in addition to the content area, if it would change the fiscal proposal. Mr. Dunn.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a great question. And one, thank you for the work on the Pathway Home Act. It is going to be transformational for the state of Minnesota. So I sincerely appreciate your work on this. The reason we're looking for a little more assistance in that is really twofold, I think. Number one, we're still creating our response system within Olmsted County. So medical recuperative care is one example where we have a huge need in our community. It's the family and youth shelter needs. So these additional resources will help us with that creation piece of a response system, as opposed to maybe it'll help us get it up and running and then longer term funding sources for the maintenance of the system. And then the other thing I'll bring up is that there's always the uncertainty with funding. While the Pathway Home Act does a great job of allocating funds, one of the challenges that we have is not all of our projects are always funded at the level of that our need is when it comes down to kind of the statewide grant program and the process. So this allows us to create and enhance our system as the way that we need to locally, and I think it's a wonderful way to build off of the work that's already being done.
And so, Mr. Dunn, just to clarify, so would the amounts in the bill remain the same, or would you be saying that, you know, hey, we could adjust somewhat and understanding there's such a need? So it's not, I don't mean to put you on the spot, just trying to understand as we're doing our thinking.
Well, and I do want to respond as well, Chair, because we didn't ask for as much as some of the others asks have been. Our ask is $1.2 million. And so we really did try to make an ask that accounted for the pathway home and what the additional need would be. But, of course, that we understand that there are constraints and open to that dialogue. But we started from that place. I just want to be really clear about that.
Okay, that's helpful. No, and I know, and I should, I know you're not in saying that. I mean, different communities are on different journeys. They're different sizes. They're, yes, I know you were not intending to sort of say anything critical about other proposals, but just this is where you all are at. So, okay, thank you so much. That's really helpful. So I'll invite, I'm not sure, I saw the Ramsey County folks looking like they maybe were ready to come up. And we'll do, are you Representative Hollins or one of your testifiers or both or anybody? Anybody? Yeah, hey, Representative Hollins, or and I think your testifier did not testify before. If you can identify yourself, if you're going to be the one speaking, either way. And then proceed.
Good morning, Chair and Committee. My name is Leanne Ahmed, and I am the Continuum of Care Coordinator for Ramsey County.
Okay. Proceed. Oh, yeah, you can proceed, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. In our slides, you'll see that we have indicated that Ramsey County represents 24% of the state's shelter beds. This is a disproportionate amount compared to the rest of the state. With that, when you look at the Pathways Bill, which is a tremendous opportunity and will benefit many, if we did the math about what we think that we'll have access to based on our population, we feel that we would expect about $2 million a year from that Pathways program. And that means that there would be a gap of about $13 million a year. Each one of our four shelters that operate in Ramsey County have an operating budget of over $2 million. Shelters are not cheap, and they're not the long-term solution. However, they are needed right now as we bridge to our housing.
Okay, yeah, Representative Hollins, did you want to add anything about any of that?
Yeah, I just, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. The one thing I wanted to acknowledge is that the Pathways Home Act does provide funding to the entire state of Minnesota, and specifically that some of it is targeted to greater Minnesota, and we know that we have a lot of people coming from greater Minnesota to Ramsey County to receive services. So I really think, you know, in my humble opinion, I really think this is a yes and situation where absolutely the Pathways Home Act is fantastic and it's going to provide shelter to those communities and make sure that people can stay in their communities in greater Minnesota, but also recognizing that we do have population density here in St. Paul, in Ramsey County, and that asking people to move back to where they were from when they are already here is really not going to work. So we still need to be able to operate our shelters and continue moving, providing housing and services to people that are in Ramsey County currently, while I think also supporting folks that are in greater Minnesota and allowing them to stay in their homes and in their communities.
And just to clarify, the bill right now proposes $37.5 million in two successive fiscal years, and I think the thinking is that would end up being $15 million a year over 5 years. I see Representative Hollins nodding. And so what I heard your testifier saying is that might shave that off by a couple million if Pathway Home is included, but it's still, you're saying the need is about $13 million a year then,
correct,
even with Pathway Home.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
For the sheltering and then the services needed to move people into support like mental health services, case management, and then housing.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Yeah, and of course, members, if anybody has questions as any of these folks are up, please let me know. But if not, thank you so much to Ramsey County and then Hennepin County. Come on up and please, Mr. Hewitt, please answer the question as you're able.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you for the question. First of all, we're hugely excited about the Pathways Home Act and the investments the state is planning to make around homeless services. In 2019, actually, a lot of our recent investments have been based off what we did in 2019 with people experiencing homelessness and our provider network to improve our shelter system in response to growing unsheltered homelessness with key priorities to lower barriers, improve outcomes, and expand capacity for underserved populations. We looked then at the proportion of funds going into single adult shelter in particular, as that was where the encampment crisis was greatest. 49% of the money was coming from Hennepin County contracts, 49% of the money was coming from private funding, and 2% of the money was coming from state emergency solutions programs. So the growth of that program is very, very significant and much needed. That said, I'll speak first to the operations, then the capital. With the intended increase in ESP in 2025, these specific programs that I have set out before you would need more than 70% of that increase dedicated to them to sustain, to not have to close or contract. Clearly, we do not anticipate Hennepin County as a whole, all of our providers, getting 70% of a statewide program, nor would we anticipate these programs getting there. So that's why I wanted to be very clear at the beginning. The bottom line here is these are programs that we have invested in deeply. We are investing deeply in family homelessness elsewhere as well. But we need that match funding at $13.5 million to sustain these services. And that is simply not feasible within the amounts coming forward in the immediate future through the Pathway Home Act. Much value as that has. On the capital side of things, I want to be very clear about timing as a critical constraint here. Both the Agat and Simpson housing projects have a lot of funding invested in them, tax credit funding, all of that complex good stuff that comes with time constraints. There is very, very significant danger in requiring those projects to wait for an RFP to be developed, to respond to an RFP, to apply for funds. If they don't break ground within a certain period of time, they lose money, they lose funding, and we're back to square one. So that, on the capital side, it's very much a question of process and timing, and on the operation side, it's simply a question at some level of scale. There is insufficient funding in 2025 to sustain these services, so I certainly agree with the previous comment that, in our opinion, this is a yes and.
Okay, thank you so much, yeah. I appreciate that. Are there other member questions? Representative Coulter.
Excuse me, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any questions. I just wanted to jump in briefly here and say, you know, we've talked a lot about, obviously, how homelessness is a statewide issue, and I just, as a suburban member, I just kind of want to emphasize, particularly as we talk about Hennepin and Ramsey counties, that homelessness is a suburban issue as well. We know it's an urban issue, a greater Minnesota issue, but it is a suburban issue. And, roughly two-thirds of Hennepin County lives outside of Minneapolis, and roughly 43% of Ramsey County lives outside St. Paul. And so I just want to be clear that when we're talking about the services in particular that our counties provide, that we just be clear about what the extent of those services and what the extent of our counties really looks like.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. So members, any other questions or discussion folks wish to have on any of these three bills at all? Just looking to see. And we'll have, I think maybe part of the reason to have these three in a row in this way is just to recognize that no matter what the budget target is the committee receives, we'll have some challenging choices, because obviously the Pathway Home Act, significant investment, and we're hearing from testifiers that even beyond that, there's, of course, significant needs as well. So, okay, well, with that, I guess we've heard from all three of our bill authors, and so we will then, unless anybody, just one more time, members, okay. So with that, the chair lays over House File 2138 as amended for possible inclusion in the committee's budget bill. I really thank so much the testifiers today, but especially for your work, for your really, really important work giving people dignity and a place to live. And we really appreciate all of that. And we're actually going to have two more bills coming up now addressing homelessness. I'm not sure if Representative Kozlowski is here. Oh, they are. Okay. Yeah. Representative Kozlowski, come on down. And Vice Chair Keeler, if you're willing to move House File 2008 to bring it before the committee.
I'd love to. I move House File 2008 in front of us.
Okay. Representative Kozlowski, would you like us to move the A2 author's amendment?
Chair, yes. Please, I would like to move the A2 author's amendment.
Okay. We can't let you do that, but we're going to have a Vice Chair Keeler, because you're not on our committee, but we're going to let Vice Chair Keeler, if you would move the A2 amendment.
Yep, I'll move that amendment.
Okay. And Representative Kozlowski, could you just tell us what that consists of, the A2?
Yes, sure. This is a technical amendment that we've been asked to consider in order to better clarify eligibility and really the types of services that will be offered.
Thank you so much. Okay. Discussion to the A2 members. Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. That motion passes. Your bill is before us as amended. Representative Kozlowski, please present your bill.
Excellent. Thank you, Chair and members. Good morning. We're really excited to be here presenting this bill today, which is House File 2008. It's a homeless youth direct cash transfer pilot bill, and it has been brought forward in amazing collaboration with the Opportunity Youth Network and many others from St. Louis County, Hennepin County, and beyond. And so this is an evidence-based practice grounded in an effort to really intentionally focus on specific homelessness geared towards youth that and give them the abundance of resources that needed to create stability and successful and full lives. And there is a handout that's been provided to you, which provides much more detail about the needs and the mechanics of this proposal. But it suffices it to say the bill creates a four-year pilot in which this coalition works with an intermediary or organization to allocate a monthly stipend to eligible homeless youth ages 18 to 24. And to be able to give you the face and the voice to the challenges, the strengths and solutions, I have a slate of homeless youth, I have a slate of testifiers here to share more about the program and what the impact will be on their lives.
Thank you so much, Representative Kozlowski. And I will apologize to that, you know, there's five testifiers and we have a very limited number of minutes. I think you're each sort of just a minute or two. My apologies. The first person listed is Ada Smith. And so, yeah, and once you get settled in, please identify yourself, share your preferred pronouns if you're comfortable, and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, everyone. I'm Karina Hunt. I am foregoing my testimony so that we can hear Ada Smith's testimony today.
Okay, great. No
she, her pronouns.
Yeah, thank you so much, and you'll be around for questions, I would suspect. Great. Yeah. That's great. Okay. And so, thank you. And so, Ada Smith then is coming up, I guess, or
I'm reading Ada Smith's.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And then I will just forego my own.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Proceed, please. Okay.
Hello, members of the House. I am sorry I cannot be in person today. My advocacy work for Fosters is overlapping with another bill hearing. I still would like to share the importance of this bill for me and Fosters like me. My name is Ada Smith, and I am a current mother of soon-to-be three. I'm a business owner, and I'm in school for social work and business management. My passion is to make sure our Fosters are not forgotten. When I aged out of foster care, just like many Fosters, I had nowhere to go. I was a young mom, so I had to put a roof over me and my son's head. I could no longer couch hop like I had to when I was in the system. I felt that since I was now grown, I needed a place to call my own, and I needed to provide the stability that I did not receive for my son. At the time, I was supposed to receive extended foster care, but many times I did not qualify because of lack of child care. I was unable to receive other county benefits because it is considered double dipping. I had to fend for myself and my son, so I went to a battered women's shelter. Eventually, with tears and prayers, I found us a home. Fast forward years later, and I had an unforeseen circumstance that caused me to be homeless again. Now not with one child, but two. I had to shut down my business and stop classes to focus on my mental health and well-being of my kids. Inflation and lack of support from the county who raised us caused me to fall into a deep, dark hole of depression. I reached out to the county and was told they can no longer help me because I was too old. Thankfully, Connections to Independence helped me through. I applied for an FYI voucher in April of 2022. I got my acceptance letter in September of 2022, but I did not move into my place until March 1st of this year. In the time between, I was able to live in one of the properties managed by C2I. Without this flexible support that gave me the time and resources to work toward my own goals, I'm not sure where we would have lived. I would have figured it out because I always do for my kids, but there are many other fosters in our community that do not have the same opportunities or support. People think being homeless gives you priority for benefits and access to community resources, when in actuality, it's a huge burden and financially draining. I had to buy food every day for me and my kids to eat due to not having a place to cook or store food. I still had my car note, car insurance, and gas to pay to make sure my kids could stay at their schools. If I had had the help of DCT, I would have been able to provide my kids with stable housing after leaving foster care. I would have taken some of the financial stress off my back when I became homeless the second time. It's mentally and physically exhausting to be homeless with little to no help. In the county, being like our parents, I feel they should step in and help just like they would their own children. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing that, reading that testimony. And Quincy Powell, I think, is the next person up. Yeah, once you get settled in, please identify your pronouns if you're comfortable and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Dear Chair and members of the committee, my name is Quincy Poe, and I'm the Opportunity Youth Network co-lead at Youth Prize. I'm here to speak on behalf of HF 2008. Opportunity youth are young people who experience homelessness, have been in the foster system, young parents, and are youth who are disconnected from educational resources and services. Youth Prize has been stewarding this work, using our connections with young adults and adult partners throughout the state to forth the best policy solutions. Throughout every aspect of doing this work, it has been in partnership with young people that we seek to serve. Homeless youth designed this pilot. We conducted adaptation workshops with over 100 young people with lived experience in Hennepin County to learn from them, to understand what they would have wanted to move them from surviving to thriving. We, as the capacity support at Youth Prize, will do the adaptation workshops and learn from young people in all parts of St. Louis County to design the services they need because place matters. Excuse me. We know that while young people have many things that are similar, the challenges of place can make things radically different. Young people are ready to make big moves for themselves and their community. They just need the right supports to get there. As a former young person who has experienced homelessness in the Twin Cities myself, the impact of what these stipends could have done for me would have been a game changer. Like many of the young people who partnered with us in this work with the focus groups that we held, when I was a homeless young person, I often ran into different barriers when trying to get help. Barriers that made me have to choose between the help that I could get, which ultimately kept me sustained in my struggle. We have an opportunity to be transformative by moving the needle forward. This pilot represents a radical shift, a new way of doing things to make youth homelessness rare, brief, non-recurring, and with research base to prove it. A stitch in time saves nine. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your testimony and for your work. I really appreciate it. I'm not sure Hassan Asadiq is coming up next, or Sarah. Yeah, we'll do it that way, yeah. Yeah, settle in, identify yourself, please share your pronouns if you're comfortable, and proceed.
For sure. Good morning. My name is Hassan Asadiq. I use he, him pronouns, we, and ours. Thank you, Chair and members of the House Committee. Thanks for having me here. I'm here to advocate and support for House File 2008, the Homeless Youth Cash Stipend Project. This is important to me because I have had the opportunity to use my unique lived experiences to serve Hennepin County in the role for this pilot program as a youth researcher with Chapin Hall's Policy Research Institute. And I'm here today to let my community know that the direct cash transfer model will work to reduce disparities that make it hard for young people to thrive. As a young person, I've navigated housing insecurity and the negative impact that generations of divestment has had on what opportunities are made accessible to young people in Minnesota. It's important to me that we as a state make a clear commitment to being more culturally responsive. This bill is important to me as it should be for all young professionals seeking to be a part of a thriving ecosystem where transformative experiences occur. We must be equally concerned with positive youth development as we are with fiscal responsibility, and in this bill, we realize the opportunity to do both, walk and chew gum. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your testimony and for your work. Appreciate it. And then the final testifier, and I'll ask you to be, I'm afraid you'll have to be quite quick. Please identify yourself once you sit down, share your pronouns if you're comfortable, and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Sarah Berger-Gonzalez. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a senior policy analyst at Chapin Hall at the University of Chicago, an independent nonprofit research and policy center. Over the last 12 months, with initial funding from philanthropy, we have been working with young adults with lived expertise, providers, local evaluators, local government, and implementation partners to adapt, implement, and study the effectiveness of direct cash transfers with young youth-driven supportive services as an intervention to address youth homelessness. I'm here today as the lead of the policy research and evaluation team to convey three main points. First, current housing solutions for youth and young adults are falling short of having a population-level impact. Data show that young adults face insurmountable challenges to accessing and securing housing, often languish in homelessness for 4 to 5 months before a solution is presented. For every additional day they wait, there's a 2% increase in their likelihood of experiencing homelessness again once housed. To this end, direct cash transfers with supportive services as proposed in HF2008 offer a promising solution. Second, we need a greater understanding of young people's pathways through and out of homelessness if we wish to inform sustainable systems-level change. Even as we have learned much about the drivers of youth homelessness, we lack effective strategies to prevent it, minimize its duration and impact, and avoid recurrence. To this end, this bill would enable critical evidence building. We will learn together whether and how direct cash transfer supports with services improve young people's housing situations, enable them to pursue education, vocation, and more. The evaluation will be carried out with rigor and transparency, including periodic and final reports to this committee as indicated. Finally, an effective pilot project will anticipate, identify, and manage barriers to success so that young people do not experience this benefit at the expense of other supports, which is commonly called a benefits cliff.
The current provisions of HF 2008 are quite germane to the success of this program. Without this support, the effective value of the cash transfers will be diminished, possibly producing new adversities and inequalities. In closing, passing this legislation places Minnesota among innovators and sets precedent for other states to follow suit, laying the foundation for testing and scaling youth co-design interventions to address homelessness. I wish to express my gratitude on behalf of my colleagues. Thank you for contemplating this critical support for young people.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your work and for being here. Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on the bill? That's that question. So not hearing any, so we're going to move to member discussion and questions. Members, Representative Perez-Vega.
Thank you, Chairman Pinto, and thank you, Representative Klasowski. I am so happy to see this. I know some of those youth that are now leading the work at Youth Prize. Mr. Quincy Powell, thank you for being here. He was one of my youth when I was at Youth Thrive in partnership with Youth Prize. And it's just beautiful to see the outcomes of when you give to where community is needed to have that accessibility, most importantly for our youth that are homeless. And you see the outcomes. You see the outcomes of graduates. You see the outcome of higher education. You see the outcomes of folks that know the work and are leading the work so that other kids don't have to face the reality of what homelessness is. Mm-hmm. This is wonderful, and I look forward to supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Katiza Witoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kozlowski. This is an incredible bill. I think it's going to impact so many people in a really positive way. And I just wanted to say that I'm so impressed with the work that you're doing in your first term. Your knowledge and your lived experience are critical to this body, and I'm glad that you're here.
I might ask a question myself, just, and this is maybe for the researcher, I'm not sure, but can you just talk about, maybe for Representative Kozlowski, but kind of how the knowledge can be used, will be able to be used in the future? I mean, I think, you know, my gut sense would be that if you've got somebody in this really precarious situation, they're experiencing homelessness at a critical stage in their lives, giving them the stability that these that the support will provide will have hugely beneficial outcomes. We're not great sometimes at the legislature at taking information like that and actually using it at scale. If just you'd rather representative or testifier can just talk about kind of how we might be able to use this information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Chair.
Yeah, please.
Thank you, Chair, and members for your comments and discussion on this. Absolutely, and that's, for me, one of the reasons why I am so excited and proud to work on this particular project, because as a state and coming from local government, as a person who has experience homelessness myself, we're really not great at listening to people with lived experience in the first place and making sure that they're not just at the table, but that we're deconstructing and creating new tables and creating whatever it is, a new system that we need. And so I think from the very get-go that the youth are designing this and leading this, and Chapin Hall, where the testifier here is from, you know, we're one of a number of states that have an opportunity to really make this transformational investment. We're already seeing the outcomes that are measured. It's safe and stable housing. It's food security. It's, you know, folks being able to go on and obtain education, and folks like our testifiers here who are the ones now leading this work. It's financial savings and health and well-being. And one of the things that we're going to be doing, in addition to looking to have the guaranteed cash assistance and making sure that folks have abundance of resources, but also the longitudinal study of the participants, and that's a really key piece that will be able to help Minnesota and us as legislators, as county, as city, as folks addressing youth homelessness specifically through culturally responsive ways, but also across the nation. And Chair, if you'd like our testifier to chime in,
yeah,
from Chapin Hall could definitely speak to that as well.
Yeah, thanks. I'll ask you to be, I think, Philly, we got a great answer from Representative Kozlowski, but Ms. Mm-hmm. Berger-Chapman, if you can have anything that you can share.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, just to add on to Representative Kozlowski, so what's unique about this is that, to the point of longitudinal study, we have lots of data and understanding about young people's pathways into homelessness and those critical factors that contribute to it. What we really do not have clarity on, apart from point-in-time counts and, again, research on specific services and programs, is young people's pathways through and out of homelessness, what services and programs they're accessing to support their thriving investments themselves and their well-being. So this
evidence building under this bill will really provide and shine a light to the state of Minnesota of those young people's pathways through and out of homelessness. This is being done in New York at the moment right now and in a couple of other states. So Minnesota will also have this data to inform how services are delivered and what young people vote with their feet, right? So what services young people are accessing to support those outcomes that Representative Klosowski alluded to.
Thank you. Representative Lesnikar, you have a question.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, because it's like saying Zalesnikar.
but I know
who you are.
Link here. Yeah.
My question is, I appreciate the intention of pathways to success because I've spent much of my career trying to help people do that, too. My question is, if you could explain to me the thought on how long would it, would a individual receive the stipend, and how much is the stipend thought to be?
Representative Klosowski.
Yes, thank you, Representative Zalesnikar, for the question, and Chair Pinto. The stipend is in Hennepin County, for example, is set at $1,000, and then for homeless youth who are also parenting would receive an additional $200. And I see that I've got a testifier who is much more in the depths and can be able to describe more about the time and making sure that we're right-sizing the resources with the need of the homeless youth.
Let's get an answer from the testifier. If we, Representative Lesnikar, does that make sense? Well, yeah, let's just, if you can finish anything further to add, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Christy Snyder. I'm from Youth Prize. The direct cash directly aligns to the amount of what rent is for shared housing in that area. So $1,000 would be for Hennepin County for a single person to share a rental in that space. So we're imagining young people would share just like they normally, you would imagine a young person would do. And it's important to also realize that that's critical because in a lot of the system, when they're in LITC-funded housing, affordable housing, so they're not allowed to work full-time, they're not allowed to go to school full-time, and so the direct cash transfers, because they're able to go on the open market, they're allowed to go to school full-time, they're allowed to work full-time, and that's a critical piece that is necessary for young people. So the adult system really isn't built for young people, and that's why direct cash transfers are so critical for young people in particular.
Representative Lesnikar, follow-up?
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you. Is that a monthly stipend? And then how long would that last?
Yeah, it is a monthly stipend, and the design is that it would be 18 to 24 months. There's also a one-time payment of up to $4,000, and the purpose of that is, as the testifier shared, it's very expensive to leave homelessness. There's often debts to shelters. There's often the first and last month deposits, the furniture that you might need, all of those sorts of expenses, cars, that allows young people to maybe live further away from the urban core where housing is a little bit more inexpensive. And so they're able to make different decisions in those ways.
Okay. Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. What is the amount for Duluth? It sounds like Duluth is one, St. Louis County, and Hennepin. So Hennepin is 1,000. What is it for St. Louis County?
We're still in design process for that, and it will be Duluth and then rural St. Louis County. So there's actually three cohorts so that we get three different geographies for the state. So more rural parts of St. Louis County, Duluth and the immediate vicinity, and then Hennepin County.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. My second question that ties to that is, I've seen some other successful programs where if money's given to get the voucher, to get the stipend, you have to attend training on financial management, education pathways, transportation, and then you attend the class and then you get a voucher. Is it modeled after something where you have to be a participant in X in order to get Y? Can you tell me more about that, please?
Ms. Snyder?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. It's actually not. It's designed in such a way that we want to pick, the reason why we're doing all these adaptation workshops is to figure out that sweet spot of what young people actually want to attend, so it's not coercive. It's designed to be in a place where we're meeting their needs. And so it's optional, but very lightly touched. Every week there'll be a text like, hey, what do you need? What's going on? It's individualized based on what their goal plans are, but it is not mandatory.
Representative Schlesinger.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you.
Maybe ask you if you can wrap up pretty quick.
This will be my last final. My suggestion would be to, if the pediatricians are right that we've heard at this committee that the brain fully develops at 25, that we allow that as a mandatory thing. If this program continues, that it's not optional. Because understanding interest, understanding how to open up a checking account, understanding how to navigate to get a pathway to success is something that adults in most of our lives here have helped us. And if they don't have that, I think that would be an absolute hindrance to somebody. I would hope that somebody would have given that to me, because my insight at that age wasn't always in my best interest. And so I think sharing that knowledge through other people is a benefit to pass on to each other. And so I would encourage that those type of offerings are part of it if this is to continue in any format. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We've got two more members. I'm asking both to be pretty quick if they can. Vice Chair Keeler.
Sure. So I like that we, okay, first, Representative Kozlowski, thank you for this. Mm-hmm. I am all on board with finding transformative ways on how we can create a healthy next generation. My one question, and probably more of a suggestion, is this age range is also going to school. You mentioned that that's a thing. I like in the area of, like 2.21 to 2.30, it talks about that this stipend cannot be considered as income. I would add that we would need to look in Chapter 135A in higher ed to make sure that it's not being used against their income for higher ed purposes mm-hmm. as well. I guess that's more of a statement than a question. Thank you.
Thank you. And then, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Very quickly, I want to thank Rep. Kozlowski for this bill. It's a very, very good idea because it's actually really long overdue. My comments were actually about the cash transfer piece. This is actually something that's been studied for decades in economics because that is the most effective way of helping lower income and poor folks. So I think it's a great idea to target to our youth who especially need that flexibility. And so really appreciate the idea. And I know this has been really successful in other places, and I'm just really looking forward to it helping folks in Minnesota, because we also know from studying this a lot that when we give cash to our homeless folks and poor folks, they actually enrich the economy around them. And so also just want to uplift that, and I just thank you for this great proposal.
Thank you, Representative Lee. And so final word to Representative Kozlowski.
Great. Well, thank you so much for this robust discussion, and I think that as we've heard that this is an example of a public-private investment in really creating the blueprint and the framework for how it is that we make our homelessness response system and housing and our systems of care really responsive and tend to our young people. Nobody deserves to experience homelessness, especially not our youngest folks. And I want to say that, a lot of times you'll catch me say never underestimate a cycle breaker, and that this program not only is going to help us break cycles, but make cycles of generational thriving and belonging and health. And so thank you for the opportunity, and do encourage your support in moving this bill to the next stop that we need to make this legacy that every youth in Minnesota and across the nation is housed.
Thank you so much, Representative Kozlowski. Thanks for focusing on this really critical period in people's lives. We know that homelessness in this period has such an impact for the rest of somebody's life, and as you say, generationally, because many of these folks may end up having a child of their own in this time. We want to make sure that those kids are being supported as well. So thank you for this work. And with that, the chair lays over House File 2008 as amended for possible inclusion of the committee's budget bill. Thank you. Thanks to Ms. Snyder. Thanks to all the testifiers for their work as well. And Representative Fisher, Chair Fisher, please make your way to the front. And Vice Chair Keeler, if you'd be willing to move House File 2845 to bring that before the committee.
So moved.
Thank you. And then Representative Fisher, looks like you don't have, there's no amendments?
That is correct, Chair. Pinto, just the bill as it is before you.
As it is. Chair Fisher, please proceed with presenting your bill. So glad to have you with us.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be here to present House File 2845. It proposes stable funding for Catholic Charities Homeless Elders Program to help address the unique challenges that exist to supporting the growing number of older adults experiencing homelessness. Older adults are the fastest growing segment of the homeless population. Many are also first-time homeless, and a majority have chronic health conditions, mental illness, cognitive impairment, or disability, limiting their ability to complete daily activities like eating, bathing, or dressing. Since 2008, the Homeless Elders Program has helped low-income adults move into stable housing by providing intensive case management from staff who are trained not only in combined coordinated entry and housing services, but also have deep understandings of the long-term services and supports, waivered services, and assisted living and nursing home settings. This program's strong reputation in the region means social workers, shelter providers, hospitals, and others are making more referrals than the team can currently support. The wait list to receive assistance averages 60 individuals and a 3 to 4 month wait, leaving already vulnerable individuals at the risk for poor health outcomes and premature death. The funding proposed recognizes the important role this program plays in our state's homeless response and will provide stable annual funding to increase capacity and reduce waiting times for those who are elderly. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Great. Thank you, Chair Fisher. And so it looks like the first person, Malia Blanchard, perhaps? Yes. And please proceed with your testimony. Share your preferred pronouns if you're comfortable, and then, identify yourself, and then proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. I use she, her pronouns. My name is Malia Blanchard. I am the program supervisor for the Homeless Elders Program at Catholic Charities Twin Cities. Homeless elders began in 2008 in response to the growing number of seniors entering shelter. Today, my team continues to see more older adults in need, people in shelter with wheelchairs and walkers who are more vulnerable to theft, seniors with memory loss and complex health conditions who have difficulty with activities of daily living. Some are on dialysis, others are being treated for cancer, some are veterans. All are at risk for premature death. Our homeless elders team is uniquely skilled to help these individuals navigate the complexities of Minnesota's aging and disability services and create a bridge to a stable home. We provide tailored intensive case management to about 120 individuals each year. In addition to coordinated entry and housing systems, we bring extensive knowledge of long-term services and supports, waivered services, and assisted living and nursing home settings. We assess eligibility and help complete applications for health insurance, waivers and assistance programs, identify housing options, and help with rent applications and viewing units, connecting people with primary care doctors, and more. We do everything we can to help them get housed and make sure they're receiving the necessary long-term services and supports to keep that housing. It takes time, but it makes a difference. People moving into a home where they can have their grandkids over for a visit again. People avoiding nursing home placement because waivers are making in-home services possible. Our wait list, however, is a constant reminder of how much more that we have to do. Shelter providers, hospitals, and social workers throughout the region make referrals for our program, but an older adult referred today could wait 3 to 4 months for services. We recently completed an intake for a gentleman in his 80s. Within 2 weeks of meeting him, he caught COVID and ended up in the ICU for several weeks. He now needs a nursing home to survive. There are individuals who die in shelter and camping out while waiting on our wait list. Could their lives be different if we had capacity to serve them sooner? Older adults are the fastest growing segment of the homeless population. There's a lot we can do as a state to change this trend, but we can start by ensuring those with immediate crisis receive the help and dignity that they deserve. With your support, my team is ready to do our part.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the testimony and for your work. And then I'll invite up Carol Atkinson Sullivan. We're going to get you, you make your way over.
I can do that.
That's okay. You can do it. That's great. Make sure, once you get settled in, make sure the microphone's right in front of you, and then please, identify yourself. Proceed.
Okay. Good morning, members of the committee of the great state of Minnesota. I love this state. My name is Carol Atkinson Sullivan, and I am speaking on behalf of myself as an elder who previously struggled with housing issues. I was homeless from March 21st until April 22, and I lived in two Salvation Army shelters. I'm really nervous.
You're all naked. You're all good. No need to be nervous.
Okay.
You're in good shape.
Okay.
All good.
Besides being homeless, I was trying to manage my own health issues. In 2019, I had a heart attack. I have PTSD, chronic sciatica, a bunch of stuff going on. And I was also dealing, and I still am, with my son Eric, who suffered a massive left brain stroke in 2020, leaving him paralyzed on his right side and with aphasia. With COVID running rampant, I could not even visit him to help him. When I was at the shelter, a gentleman took me to Catholic Charities, where I met Malia, and she helped me get into the elders program. Within 3 months, I was able to apply for Section 8 housing voucher, and in April of 2022, I was able to secure a two-bedroom place for my son and I, and Eric could finally leave the nursing home after 2 years. None of this would have been possible without the help of Catholic Charities and Malia's in-depth knowledge of resources. Had I not been referred to this program, I would not be alive, and my son would be a ward of the state and forgotten about. Having a stable home is such a blessing. My son and I are together. He has recovered immensely. He can now walk with a walker, has more movement in his right arm, and his speech is improving, even though it's very labored. And I've been able to focus on improving my own health, too. And I am able to process and recover from a very traumatic year of being homeless. I was attacked at the Salvation Army. I've had enough. In that we only have 2 minutes, I would invite you to contact me and discuss the outrageous mess our elderly are in with affordable housing. We are not disposable people. We are not stupid. We deserve dignity and respect. And again, I thank you, legislatures, for listening and hopefully hearing us from your hearts. And please support this program.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your testimony, for being here, for sharing your journey. And congratulations to you on all that's on your progress and your son. And thank you for sharing what you've experienced. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on the bill? Should ask that question. I don't see any. And so, members, we can move to questions or discussion. Mm-hmm. Members have. Representative Perth,
thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you, Representative Fisher. And thank you to Carol for her testimony. My late great aunt, Carmen Ana Vega, was a volunteer at Catholic Charities. It's where she connected with a lot of the elders like herself who needed more help in housing. And it's just great to see that program. I know that she cherished it in her memory, and I want to just give you a lot of praise for telling your story. And I look forward to doing what we can in our district of St. Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. And Chair Fisher, I don't know if you were here earlier when I asked the question about, I do expect that the Pathway Home Act will be included in our committee's budget bills. It's certainly my intention to do so. And so just thinking through how, if at all, that impacts the proposal here, knowing there was a separate proposal from Ramsey County, I'm just trying to think about how these different pieces fit together in your view or the view of your testifier.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. I know that as I've looked at it, this hits a little different area as a direct appropriation to Catholic Charities, and I think it is add-on to what is being proposed with Pathways Home is how I see it.
Okay. Yeah. Are there, and can you remind me, so there is a homeless elders program currently, and what is the current funding? So would this expand it? Would it be replacing existing funding?
I'll go to my testifier.
Indeed. Yeah, please.
Thank you for that question. So right now our program is funded by a Live Well at Home grant through DHS that provides about $325,000. This would be in addition to increase our staffing in order to serve more individuals, and some of that that financial assistance would be direct financial assistance for our clients as well, for things like rental deposits, bridging appointments for furniture, things like that to get people settled in. And then our program also really has that expertise in the long-term services and supports as well to better support our elders.
Okay. Thank you so much. I may have some follow-up questions as well. I can connect with you, Chair Fisher, but this is helpful. I might encourage you, maybe I will just say this. I'm sure if any of the Ramsey County folks are still here, but the sort of having, I think, the more comprehensive approach we can have to these issues, the better. And so certainly continuing to be in touch with them, I think will be useful. And so we can do that. Just seeing if there's any other questions or comments from members in the committee, and otherwise we're going to go to Chair Fisher for the final word as usual.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. This is a great bill. I think my testifier, Carol, did a great job of explaining the positive impacts that can have, and I will ask for your support.
Thank you so much. And thanks. This is such an important work that you all are doing, as we heard directly from somebody who's been impacted by it. So thank you. With that, the chair lays over House File 2845. And making sure, yep, that bill as is, there were no amendments. And for possible inclusion in our committee's budget bill, thank you. Representative Brand, please make your way up. And I think this bill, Representative Katisa Watoon, is going to do the motion.
Representative Katisa Watoon,
yeah, please.
Mr. Chair, yes, I would move that House File 1074 be re-referred to the Committee on Economic Development.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Brand, you've got an A1 amendment, and you want to have that moved?
Yeah, good morning. And thank you, members of the committee, for hearing the bill. Yes, I would like to have the A1 amendment moved in committee, please.
Okay. Representative Katisa Watoon, you willing to do that, too?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A1 amendment to be before the committee, and I just want to thank Representative Brand for his work on this. He and I have done some work in this space together in the past, and I'm grateful for his continued commitment to child care, both in the suburban and urban areas, but especially in greater Minnesota.
Okay. And the A1 amendment members can see, and maybe, I don't know if Representative Brand or Representative Katisa Watoon want to just say what the A1 amendment is. Representative Katisa Watoon, we'll go with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while this is a friendly amendment, it's actually my amendment, so I'll cover this. But yes, it is an appropriation to Women Venture. So Women Venture is an amazing organization that works specifically with women, not only in the child care space, but particularly in the child care space. And as I mentioned, Representative Brand and I have done some work together on this in the past. This amendment appropriates $2 million to Women Venture to support child care providers through business training and direct support services, and to be able to create materials that could be used online and accessible for the operation of child care businesses across the state.
Okay, and I'll maybe just note that both the bill and the amendment, if it goes on, the funding would be decided upon and coming out of the Economic Development Committee. So we're simply sending it on to that committee for their consideration. Members, any discussion to the A1 amendment? Just get the bill, which the form which the author wishes and is willing to have it be. Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes. And so Representative Brand to House File 1074 as amended.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 1074 is an important bill for greater Minnesota child care needs. As we look at opportunities to work with partners across the spectrum of the state of Minnesota, The Minnesota Initiative Foundations have a key role in addressing some of these problems, these challenges that we have in our economy right now. One of the challenges that we have in the economy is just a shortage of child care across our state. We have, in Greater Mankato, the lowest unemployment in the entire nation. Also, we also have over 1,000 child care slots that are unmet. And so this type of legislation, what it would do is it would really work with child care providers and encourage new providers to come online to provide those critical services that are really important to getting people back to work. Just as with House File 1180, which is another child care bill that I'm working on this year, House File 1074 really, I think, addresses the absolute need, the essential need that we have to get these parents back to work. Of course, you know, in a lot of cases, and I just know a lot of friends, a lot of dear friends that have to decide whether to take 10 years, 5 or 10 years off of their career path to grow their family, or, you know, or they can find child care opportunities, and it's really kind of a challenge. There's long waiting lists in my particular state, part of the state, you know, I think that what this would address is, and that we've had previous funding of this type of idea in the past here in the legislature. In 2019, I was the author of this bill. I believe it was House Bill 422 at that time. And we got funding, and what it really did was it helped. But this year, we're asking for a sizable amount in addition to what was previously funded to give MIFs really that engine, that horsepower to really get more child care providers online. And so I just kind of set the stage here. Now I'm going to have an expert testifier here come in and really make the case for why it's essential for this to pass this year. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And Mr. McMahon, and I'll ask you to keep it in just a minute or two, as you're probably aware, but please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Scott McMahon. I'm the executive director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership, here to speak in support of this bill. And I do want to acknowledge our appreciation for Governor Walz for including this provision for the MIF, for the Initiative Foundations in his budget as well. In 1986, the six Initiative Foundations were created in response to the farm crisis. It was local leaders throughout Greater Minnesota and the McKnight Foundation who realized there was a need for some new economic development catalyst to exist in Greater Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And so the six foundations were created. It was always intended for the MIFs to have a strong partnership with the state of Minnesota to the point where their geographic regions were aligned with DEED, or at the time what is now DEED, the geographic regions that they separate our economy into. Over the time, there have been a number of partnerships between the state and Initiative Foundations beginning in 1987. And the most recent ones that you all are aware of is during the COVID pandemic, the Initiative Foundations were the entities that distributed all of the business relief money in throughout Greater Minnesota. They distributed the Main Street Revitalization Funds to Greater Minnesota. And pertaining to this committee, when the government, when everything shut down in COVID, the MIFs were actually the ones in partnership with some other foundations who did the first round of stabilization grants to our child care providers before you all could step in and figure out what that system needs to look like. So there's a long history of the state partnering with Initiative Foundations to support economic development and prosperity in our region. The situation we face right now is we're short 42,000 child care slots in Greater Minnesota. As a result, employers are telling us daily that the two things that are holding them back from expanding, from growing, and developing the workforce that they need are either housing or child care. When we don't have child care available in our communities, our businesses can't hire the employees that they need, as Representative Brand alluded to.
And I probably need you to wrap up in the next few seconds.
And so what the Initiative Foundations do is they provide technical assistance and community planning to allow communities to figure out how they can address their local child care shortage. And so these, the skills and the assets that they bring the communities are critically important for us to address how do we move forward on addressing this 42,000 child care slot shortage that we have. So I'm happy to take any questions that members may have.
Thank you so much. And members, to confirm, the funding's going to the economic development, but our committee did need to review because of the child care implications of this. And I think you don't need to tell us about the just massive need for early care and learning throughout the state. Are there any members of the public wish to testify on House File 1074? Oh, yeah, there is. Okay, yeah, come on up. And I'm afraid we'll have to keep it pretty short, but please, just a minute or so, but please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Leanne Rasajak. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm the CEO of Women Venture. Chair Pinto and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today, particular as a mom of four. This is a cause that I'm highly passionate about. Women Venture, you know, our role is to provide a level playing field for women entrepreneurs who face unique obstacles in business, specifically those who are economically or socially disadvantaged. Just in this quarter, over the last 3 months, we have lost a significant amount of child care providers in the state of Minnesota, 46 to be exact, across the state. These 46 closures were felt in Canby, Walker, Elgin, Pine City, Thief River, Benson, Wilmer, Austin, St. Peter, and many more communities, just to name a few. We believe that with this additional funding, we'll be able to expand the capital access and programming that's needed both to retain the child care providers that are currently in our market while also adding supply across the state of Minnesota. So we appreciate the opportunity to be able to testify in front of you today. You know, there are several stats in which we can point to. I think you are very well aware of the crisis that we're currently facing. With this additional funding, we're optimistic that we'll be able to retain the providers while adding supply. It's notable that currently Women Venture serves almost half of your districts that are represented within the committee, and in partnership with other, including the Minnesota Initiatives Foundation, we'll be able to expand that footprint to help meet the child care crisis over the next couple of years.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah.
Any other members of the public who wish to testify? So not hearing any. And so member discussion, if any. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to ask quickly, do you see this bill helping expand family child care provider options in greater Minnesota?
Representative Brand.
Yes, I do. I do believe that this will be not only opportunities for centers, but also for in-home daycare providers as well. And to answer your question head on, yes.
Representative Hudson, yeah, and I think there has been funding flowing through the MIF, so it may be that there's a comment about that somebody could respond to Representative Hudson as to whether family child care has been receiving support. I assume Representative Hudson, you'd appreciate that follow-up. I'll direct it back to you, but Representative Hudson?
I like that answer. I hope that it has that effect. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Maybe that's all we need. Okay. Anybody else? Questions, comments? I think we're over the scheduled 10 a.m., so I think we're just going to go back to Representative Brand for closing comments.
Well, I simply think this is a slam dunk bill for us, and it's not just that, but it's also a bipartisan bill, which honestly we don't have a lot of, and I think that also really points out the imperative that we have as a bipartisan issue to really get this accomplished. And so thank you for letting us hear the bill today, letting us amend the bill to bring on a partner to support them as well. And I appreciate the time today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your work, Mr. McMahon. Thanks for your work. With that, members, all in favor of approval of the motion, let me see. So Representative Khadija Batoon renews her motion that House File 1074 is amended, be referred to the Committee on Education, Development, Finance, and Policy. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. The motion passes. The bill, as amended, is on its way to economic development. And members will see you on Thursday. And please plan to have that meeting go till 10:15 as well. My apologies.
Thank you.
Did I say education? Oh, my goodness. Okay. But I think along the way, we said just at the last second, I said education. So the bill is on its way to economic development, finance, and policy. That's what the motion was. That's what passed. That's what's happening. Thanks, all. Have a great rest of the day. Meeting's adjourned.